around, we went through the levels of illness that are recognized when somebody is ill on Shabbos. So we talked about the top level, pikuach nefesh, chola sheyesh bo sakana, somebody who is dangerously ill. We talked about sakana, safek pikuach nefesh, where somebody might be dangerously ill and you don't know, and about the fact that that's really a vague definition because it's very broad. One level down from that was sakanas aver, right? Danger to a body part, right? Do you remember how we defined that? What the definition was for that? Yeah.
A part of the body that's no longer functioning.
Right. It won't function the way that it normally should. Chola she'ein bo sakana was what?
Yeah. Like someone who's sick but is not in danger.
Right.
Or it could be like a child.
Right. We said children qualify. We said somebody who's bedridden. Right? The good or not good, depending on whether you actually have that condition. And then either mechush or miktas choli, two different terms that are closely associated, referring to somebody who has a mild illness. Right? They're not comfortable. They're not in any danger. They're able to walk around. They just, you know, they don't feel well. So those were the basic criteria, the basic categories, I should say, that we identified. And we talked a little bit about what one would do on Shabbos for each. I gave you that table. But we're going to go back to each of these categories in greater detail eventually. So, Morel, right?
Yeah, Morel. Okay. Sorry, I was stuck in the Ovid.
Mm. Hopefully not the third one. Okay, so we started on last time this Gezerah, this rabbinic decree, about grinding ingredients, right? The concern that if you let people take medication on Shabbos, and this is the way that I'm formulating it is what we said at the end, but I was worried that people weren't getting it, so I want to make sure to state it clearly. The concern is that if you let people take medicine on Shabbos, then in the future, when somebody is ill, they're going to assume that they're able to grind in order to make medication. So it's not about what they're going to do right now, where you'll say, well, right now I have medication, so therefore there's no concern. The concern is next time, whether the person who took the medicine or the person who saw them is going to assume it's okay to make medicine on Shabbos. You follow? That's the consideration. So that we gave a leniency in a case that hopefully we'll come back to today, the case where you, the person taking it, made the medicine before Shabbos, so therefore they really know it has to be done before Shabbos, and where nobody else can tell that they're taking medication because it looks like a normal thing. They look like they're washing out their eyes. It doesn't look like they're applying some kind of medication to their eyes. And so nobody else is going to be fooled, right? Into thinking you can make medicine on Shabbos. They're not going to be fooled either, and therefore we were lenient. Yes?
Did you speak about swallowing pills on Shabbos?
We did not yet. We did not yet. That's a discussion we have to get to when we talk in greater depth about various forms of medication. But not right now yet. We haven't gone there yet. The last thing that we did, and I wanted to come back to it because it was really too much of a rush at the end, is the question of, but nowadays, the great, great majority of human beings, given the actual ingredients, could not make medication. If you gave me a block of acetaminophen, assuming that they're actually, you know, prepared that way, and I don't actually know that, I wouldn't know dosage. I would not know what I mix it with. I would not know how to make, you know, into any form that I could take. I don't know if taking it as a powder is effective, is bad. Like, I wouldn't know what to do. I would just say, forget it, I'll just be sick. So where is the concern that somebody is going to make medication in our day? And that's not a phenomenon that's brand new in 2023. This has been so for more than a century, that people, generally speaking, were not making their own medication. So why is it that we still have this decree? So there have been various halachic authorities over the past century who have raised this question, and they've brought two different approaches. And this is what I was trying to clarify last time, and it's brought in source number one on your sheet from Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg. The first approach that he brings, I'm not going to read it out from inside. I thought I would, but then I figure it's easier if I actually explain it without the text, but you can see it in the text. The first argument is, we're going to see later on that the decree against medication does not apply to a medical treatment if using that treatment never involves grinding. if treating that illness never involves grinding. I gave the example last time of somebody who has a dislocated jaw. You can try giving them medicine. You can give them painkillers. But there's no medicine you can give them that's going to put their jaw back in place. That just ain't happening. So because of that, massaging a jaw to get it back in place is okay on Shabbos. If their jaw is dislocated, but not in a way that's dangerous, not in a way that qualifies for the higher levels, but you just need to shift it, so that's fine. Because no one would ever use medication in order to achieve that goal, or medication that you would grind up in order to achieve that goal. It's just not a thing. Just give me 1 second, just to finish the argument. So the argument goes that since you're allowed to use medication on Shabbos for things that never get ground up, or medical treatment, I should say. The word medication fools people. You're allowed to use a medical treatment that never involves grinding. So since all of our pills never involve grinding, I should be able to take them on Shabbos. That's the argument. Bailey and then Ariane.
What about like topical medication? Because you don't really grind, sort of like creams and ointments and whatever. Unless you do, and I'm mistaken.
Right, so I think they are made, at some stage there is grinding involved. There is a discussion, which I don't think we're going to get into because I didn't think it was particularly necessary for this, but I'll mention it since you asked. What if grinding is not involved, but other malachos are involved? What if it's a medication that they boil instead of grinding? Does the decree apply in that case? So I don't think I ended up bringing that as part of the discussion. Let me just take a fast look. But I don't think that I ended up incorporating that. No, I did not. So, oh no, you know what? No, I didn't. Okay. So there is something from Rav Moshe Feinstein that makes it sound like, you know what? I did bring it. We'll get to it. Never mind. It is on there. It's been a while. Ariana and then Rina. Yeah.
I was going to ask about like what you just said about like other muscle like involved. Like if it's not just grinding, but like if you have to like eat something up or like turn something on. Like,
right. So we'll come back to it. Yeah. Rina. So Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg's first paragraph, he brings the concept from the Taz is the one that's noted in there, but we're going to go through it. We're coming back to that whole idea. So yeah, you don't need it yet. The only reason I mentioned it is because that's what underpins the Tzitz Eliezer's argument. He says since medical treatments that don't involve grinding are okay on Shabbos, therefore, assuming you're not violating some other malacha, by the way, just to be clear, just the medicine. So too, you could take all medications because we don't grind them on Shabbos. That's argument number one. Argument number two, which he really doesn't like, but others have brought it, is to say the whole decree no longer applies. This is a case of a decree for which the reason is gone because we don't grind things. It's a more global dismissal of the decree as opposed to just saying, well, narrowly, the decree applies, it's just that we don't grind them. He said, no, let's just throw out the decree altogether, which is controversial because we have a principle, you don't discard rabbinic decrees unless you have a rabbinical court that's greater than the one that created it, which we don't. Natalie? Okay. So those are the two arguments. However, Rabbi Waldenberg notes that this is problematic. And the reason why it's problematic, if you look at source number one, both of them are problematic. If you take a look at the last line in the English or the Hebrew, in source number one, he says, and in general, it is hard to argue to permit today. Why? For there have increased in various populations those who use home remedies, which they prepare themselves, such that the reason for the decree of grinding ingredients does apply. In other words, people use homeopathic medicines. Right? I'm not going to ask here who does or who's familiar or whatever. They're somewhat controversial, but a lot of people use homeopathic medicines which involve grinding up herbs. People, in fact, do that. And therefore, he says, I'm not so sure that that we can permit on that basis. To this, I'll add, 1 second, source number two, Rav Herschel Schechter, talking about Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, and a rabbi who came to Rabbi Soloveitchik and told, you know, he told him or it became known that he was permitting people to take medicine on Shabbos, making the argument that people don't grind medicine anymore. And you look at Rabbi Schachter's record of what Rabbi Soloveitchik's reaction was. He says, I remember how our master, meaning Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, was angry regarding a rabbi who permitted his congregant to take medicine on Shabbos and Yom Tov. He said thus, we are upset about the earlier ones. The meaning, what he was saying, and I added in brackets, we have certain cases of rabbinic decrees where already 1,000 years ago, rabbi said, yeah, this isn't practical anymore, this isn't relevant anymore. The clapping and dancing one that on Shabbos that I mentioned last time is an example of that. He said, I don't understand how they were able to repeal that decree. I'm not now going to say, sure, you can repeal a decree today. I don't think they should have been able to repeal that 1,000 years ago either. That was Soloveitchik's response to the argument. He said it's not repealed. I would add one more thought that I think is important to recognize, because I think it's a major factor in this whole thing. And that is, because we have leniencies for all of the levels of need that we described, the person who's dangerously ill, the person who's bedridden, the child, all of these people have ways to get treated, whether through biblical law, through rabbinic law, non-Jew, whatever it is, but we have so many ways to treat people who are anything other than just, I have a headache. Not a migraine, a mild headache. My throat's hurting me. So since we have treatments for all of the more serious conditions, there's less of a halachic imperative to say, you know, people are suffering on Shabbos. And now I have a big tzorech. There's a great need. Their oneg is ruined, and therefore we have to find a way to get rid of their headache. Like there's just less of a need to undo that. And I think that's part of the I think that's part of what's going on here. Yes.
Could it be that you didn't post the newest
sheet
to Canvas?
I did post it.
Because it's not showing up.
It's not showing up under files.
Yeah.
Number 3 is the last one. Hang on. Yeah. Yeah.
It's because there are so many leniencies for, like, the other levels that there's not as many leniencies for, like, this level.
Right. There isn't the same urgency. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, if you're dealing with someone who's a child, if you're dealing with someone who's in great pain, we can take care of that. So for the person who's not in great pain, there's less of a motivation of, we need to find a way to undo the, when I say that, I want to be very careful to explain what I mean, because that's easily misunderstood. My statement is not, you know, there's an old line which some of you may have heard, where there's a rabbinic will, there's a halachic way. You know, as long as you really want to, so you'll find it. That's not necessarily so. But when you make an argument like the one that the Tzitz Eliezer quotes from Ktzos HaShulchan, from Olas Noach, in the that next last paragraph in source number 1, when you see an argument like that of we should repeal it, yeah, you look at it and say, well, why? Is that really needed? For us to go into halachically dangerous space like that, there has to be some kind of a real need that you're gonna have. That's the point. So that's the material for the quiz. Don't panic, it's open notes, you'll all be fine. I'm going to give out the sheets, and while you're taking the quiz, I'm going to upload the source sheet for this week, which apparently I did not do. I apologize. I'm going to pause the recording. All right. So, we've now seen the decree against use of medication lest you grind it, or lest you not grind it now, but lest you grind in the future, or somebody else see it and grind in the future. We're now going to see 4 exceptions to this decree. Remember, I said to you, like, there are all sorts of caveats and exceptions. There was somebody who will remain nameless, but who I saw sitting towards the back when I first mentioned the decree, and was like, what, really? Now we get to the exceptions to the rule, or some of the key exceptions. There are more that we're not going to get to, but at least these are worth knowing about. So the first one is the one that we've already talked about, which is therapies that do not involve grinding medicine.
therapy is without grinding. I've already explained the concept,
right? I gave you the jaw case. That's what we're talking about here. It comes up in a Gemara in Avodah Zarah. And again, sorry about not having uploaded the sheet before, but now you all should have access to it. If you take a look at source number 3, Gemara in Avodah Zarah, this is the jaw case. Rabbi Bar Zutra says, quoting Rabbi Chanina, one may elevate ears on Shabbos. So for a long time when I learned that, I had no idea what elevating ears actually meant. Like, how do you elevate an ear? What happened to the ear that it needs to be elevated? What are we talking about? However, there's a great book written by somebody by the name of Julius Preuss. He was a doctor. He lived in Germany. He wrote it in German. However, Dr. Fred Rosner translated it. I don't know if he translated the whole thing or just key parts. It's pretty big. But he took the cases of medical treatments that appear in the Gemara, which are often very hard to understand, and try to explain them in the context of modern medicine. So this is referring to X. In this case, the ear issue. He said we're talking about a dislocated jaw. That's what elevating ears means. What you're doing, you know, the jaw. Anybody have TMJ, temporomandibular joint, right? So you know, it manifests like right over here. So something, you know, apparently where there's a dislocation that's occurring over here, you would do something in this area that they're calling elevating ears. I don't know, some form of massaging it that would cause the that would at least help with the condition. So the Gemara there, he says, you're allowed to elevate ears on Shabbos. Then Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda says, well, you're allowed to do it by hand. Yes. So ostensibly the same would apply. The only caveat that I would make, which I mentioned when we talked about this briefly earlier, is dislocations can sometimes be exceedingly, exceedingly painful where the person is in the level of Chol HaShein Bo Sakana. You know, like a person could really be bedridden from a dislocation. So then you'd be allowed anyway, correct. But sometimes it may be that it's more mild. Sometimes you could have a person, and here I'm veering into medical territory, which is dangerous because I'm not a doctor, but sometimes you'll have somebody who suffers dislocations like serially over and over again because it's already happened so many times before. Maybe for them it's not as painful, I don't know. But Rav Shmuel Yehuda says you're only allowed to do it by hand. You're not allowed to do it using an ointment, medicine. Or Ikadi Amri, some say, what he said was, you can do it with ointment, but you're not allowed to do it by hand. Just the opposite. He wanted you to use an ointment. He did not want you to do it by hand. Why not? Because if you do it by hand, you can bruise people. You're not allowed to bruise people on Shabbos. General principle, don't do that. So we're going to come back to that. Hang on, we're not ready for that yet. We're going to need to explain a lot of this. Some of this should make no sense to you in the context of things we've already said. So if it sounds strange, hang in there. Good question. We're not there yet. It's a good question. Which, when we get to what you can do for individual things, like the real breakdown of what is, you know, then we'll talk about that. Right now, I'm just trying to show you examples of exceptions to the rule. So the Rambam comments on this Gemara. If you take a look at source number 4, Hebrew is on one side, English over on the next. The Rambam says he's dealing with a different case. He says you're allowed to, quote, choke. He doesn't mean choke. Let's be really clear about that. You're allowed to choke or wrap a child and elevate ears by hand or with an implement and elevate the earlobe. All of this and the like are not done with ingredients so that there will be concern for grinding. And the situation is painful. So therefore, you're allowed to do it. This person is in pain. Not bedridden, but they're in pain. And even an adult, not just the child. And you're allowed to do it because they never use medicines. It's always done with this massage. Now tell me something. Take a look carefully at that Rambam. This, you don't need to look so carefully. And take a look at the Gemara and tell me why this is hard to understand. Yes, Rina.
We never discussed painfulness before.
That's true. The Rambam is introducing the pain discussion, I think, because he's saying it's still strenuous to do this, and therefore he needs to justify doing it on Shabbos. I think that's why. Yeah.
He doesn't address the bruising issue.
He doesn't address the bruising issue. He seems not to consider that a thing. What else is very strange? Yeah.
I mean, first talk about ointment.
Yeah. The Gemara talked about doing it with an ointment. That's with ingredients. That, you know, well, how can you pretend that there's no ointment issue involved? Not to mention, how would you do this with an ointment? What exactly would you do to relocate an ear via an ointment? So the Kesef Mishnah, which is Rabbi Yosef Karo's commentary to the Rambam, and I brought it for you here, in source number 5, asks that question. Take a look at number 5. He says, this is difficult to understand. How did our master know, master being the Rambam, how did he know to permit with an implement? First of all, how did he know it's okay? Right? We have two different views in the Gemara. One view says yes, one view says no, you're going to cause bruising. Further, how did he write that all such things are not done with ingredients, indicating that they're not normally done? They it should say ingredient. That's actually a typo. Sorry about that. An implement would be a kli, a tool. But it should say ingredient. It shouldn't say implement. He says, the Talmud sounds like people normally do them with ingredients, since it had to say, but not with medicine. Further, why didn't our master write explicitly, but not with medicine? He should have said that. We okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So he says, therefore it appears to me that the Rambam had a different edition of the Gemara. He says, the Rambam's edition of the Gemara is not the one that's in front of us. Has to be so, he says. It appears to me that his edition said with an implement instead of with medicine. In other words, Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda taught you're allowed to do this by hand or with a tool. In other words, you go to the doctor and you say, I have a dislocated jaw, and the doctor has a jaw relocating thing. Anyone who's ever had orthodonture knows, right? Doctors have all sorts of tools. They have all sorts of things. So maybe there is a relocating tool that some use. And the way to read the Gemara is that first, Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda said, you're allowed to do it by hand, or you're allowed to do it with a tool. Some say by hand, not with a tool, because the tool can bruise. And the Rambam followed the lenient approach and said, no, you could do it by hand, you could do it with a tool, and that's fine, because the whole thing is a derabbanan, it's a rabbinic issue, and therefore it's lenient. The Rambam's point was, as he concludes, it was not normally done with medicine, therefore there's no reason to decree for grinding ingredients. So the upshot of what the Rambam is saying, as explained by the Kesef Mishnah, is I am allowed to relocate the person's jaw. I'm allowed to take care of fitting it back in place. There is no concern for potential grinding of ingredients, because no one does. And when the Gemara said something about people using ointment, no. No one's using ointment. That addition was simply incorrect. The addition of the Gemara that you should have talks about using your hands to do it or using a tool to do it. Nothing about ointments and medication. Clear? You got that? Rina and then Natalie.
I'm confused what you're saying the typo was, because the Rambam's saying it's not allowed with ointment.
Right, no, the typo though is where the Kesef Mishnah says on the end of the second line in the English, where he says that how do you write that all such things are not done with ingredients, indicating that they are not normally done with an... Yeah, it should say ingredient, not implement there. Yeah.
So the Rambam says...
Oh, sorry, what's that? Natalie, you were reading?
No.
Okay, yeah.
So the Rambam says you're allowed to use... that you shouldn't use ointment because you could just use...
The Rambam doesn't believe that anyone ever used ointment for this. The Rambam, in his edition of the Gemara, does not have ointment being used. No one is using ointment to do this. That's the way he understands what's going on.
And he says a tool and a hand.
I'm sorry?
He's saying a tool and...
A tool and a... Right. Tool, hand are both fine.
Okay.
That's the idea. And this is brought in the Shulchan Aruch, this idea that in the event that you have a medical treatment that does not involve medicine, that it's okay. This is brought in the Shulchan Aruch, and it's brought in the Mishnah Berurah. Hang on one second, Ricky. I just want to show you the Mishnah Berurah in source number 6. He says, if a person has aching eyes could mean your eyes hurt, or it could mean a headache behind your eyes, either one. They place a metal implement on the eye to cool it off. That was something people did. It was like, you know, that helps the person to feel better. As well as put a ring or implement around the eye to prevent inflammation from spreading. He's quoting that from Rashi on the Gemara. And the Chaye Adam, wrote that the same applies to pressing a knife on a bruise to keep it from spreading. All of these things are things that you would never do with medication. So therefore, you would be allowed to do this on Shabbos. Yes, Ricky?
I think you mentioned this already, but this is only the four exceptions to the line, right? We're not talking about yet, like, what if it violates the law.
Correct. We're just dealing with this rabbinic decree. That's all we're working with. So this is brought as a matter of halacha, and it comes up in a range of cases. However, somebody asked a question before, which I wasn't sure whether I was going to get to it in my notes or not. But lo and behold, it is indeed in my notes. Oh, you know what? So I skipped something here. Sorry. Take a look at 7 and 8 first. 7 and 8 are important as well. The Shulchan Aruch writes, one may not be mitamel on Shabbos. Now, hitamlut in modern Hebrew means
exercise.
But that's not what he means when he uses the word. He tells you what he means. One may not be mitamel, meaning to massage the body with force so that one is exhausted and one sweats. One may not press a child's belly to cause excretion. That's a whole other discussion, which we're not going into. Mildly gross, but also not part of our discussion right now. My point is, this business about not being mitamel, not massaging the body to cause sweating. So what's the issue here? You don't do that with medication. It's, you know, it's physical pressure. So the Chafetz Chaim, Rabbi Yisrael Meir Kagan, author of the Mishneh Berurah, comes into source number 8, and he says, one should not ask, since grinding ingredients is not relevant here, we should permit it, like in the next paragraph in the Shulchan Aruch about treatments that don't involve grinding. One could say that sometimes they cause an ill person to sweat via ingredients, when as a treatment they want to get the person to sweat. They're specifically doing that to cool off the body, whatever their purpose is. They want to cause the person to sweat. They do that by giving them things that will actually induce sweating. So we worry they might do the other healing method instead of doing the massaging method. As opposed to the next paragraph, the case where you're putting things on the eye, you're relocating the jaw, where there is no relevant cure for those things via grinding ingredients, so there is no decree. That's the difference.
Yeah. What does that mean? I'm a little confused.
It means that you don't look at the actual treatment. Does this treatment involve grinding? You look at the goal, what you're trying to achieve with it, and do they sometimes achieve that goal via medicine that gets ground up? That's what we're asking.
So you're saying, like, if blocking a jaw, if it needs to use massaging to, get it in, and, you're going to start sweating from it?
No. Massaging that's intended to cause sweating, it's a whole different thing. If specifically giving somebody a massage with the goal of heating up their body and causing them to sweat. Don't look at me, I don't know anything about this, but that's a thing, and that's not allowed on Shabbos. We are concerned because sometimes they induce sweating via other means. That's the idea. Natalie.
I'm just going to reiterate that massaging the body for a week ML, the purpose of that is to sweat.
Yeah, specifically for that purpose.
When you mean other means, giving them medication to make them sweat?
Correct. That's the concern. Naomi. So Sakonas Aver could apply in the event that they wouldn't be functional if you waited until after Shabbos. But if you have the option of waiting, then that's less of a thing. We have to talk about that still, the issue of what about things you can take care of after Shabbos. We haven't gotten there yet.
I'm confused what the actual problem is. When you sweat, is it the problem of you will think that you could take a supplement or something to sweat on Shabbos? Is that the issue?
Yeah, okay. Correct. And that you can grind in order to make whatever it is. Correct. So I brought you in source number 9, just a one-line source. I brought it primarily so that you'd be aware of where I got it from, because it's a very good article to be aware of. There's a website called Halachapedia, and they have very, very good articles. Occasionally I come across it when I'm looking for something, and I'm consistently impressed with what they've done with it. So this article is an article on medicine on Shabbos, and I think that it's worthwhile in general for you to be familiar with it. Certainly those who told me that they're interested overall in medicine on Shabbos as an issue, very good work I think, on this. And I gave you an example here from it of something which, let's say a person has braces, not braces that are, you know, installed and are going to need to go to the dentist to get them, or the orthodontist to get them taken out, but something that you can put in, you can take out, and it's meant to ensure that your teeth are growing in the right way, like a retainer type of a situation, yeah. So are you allowed to put them in on Shabbos? Is that called medical, and therefore I'm not allowed to? So he says, no, they're fine, because there's no medicine that you could use to get your teeth in line. That's not a thing. Therefore, this is okay as well. Yeah?
So can you assume it's like the same thing for, like, let's say, like a broken finger, like to put it in a splint? Because, like, there's no medicine.
So for sure, but usually when we're talking about broken bones, we already get into some of the higher levels anyway. You're not on the low level when you're with a broken bone. Question will be what kind of break, what part of the body, you know, that kind of thing. How close is it to the end of Shabbos? All the, you know, the practical considerations that come up. So, the last bit was, yes. Yeah, that's a really good question. What if somebody came up with a medication that now could ruin things for us? Because now you'd say, well, you can use a medicine for it. We have a general principle that we don't make new decrees. On the other hand, you could argue, well, this is an old decree, and this is just an application of an existing decree. It's a good question. I'm not sure. I could see it becoming a problem, unfortunately. So let that be a lesson to you. Don't come up with medications like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
But with the fact that, like, the home remedy can't, like, not be able to accomplish that, like, affect whether we can or can't use that.
In other words, if the home remedies that people come up with are not effective, you're saying.
Yeah, like, so then there's nothing.
The problem is that people use them, believing they are effective. As long as people would use them, we're going to have a problem. It's only when they discard them that, you know, then you can say, so no one would ever do this via medication. But even, it doesn't, it's not about the effectiveness, it's about what people do. That's the concern. So, last note, someone did ask the question of what if you would make the medication via some means other than grinding, but also an act that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos, like cooking. So what about a case like that? So I said before that generally speaking, the language in the Gemara, the language in the Rambam, the language in the Shulchan Aruch only talk about grinding. The decree is only about grinding. So if there's some medication that is made, but not via grinding, according to that, you'd be okay. There is this one line in Rav Moshe Feinstein that is problematic. He's talking about a different issue. He's not talking about our discussion. He's talking about a case in which you have somebody who is ill, seriously ill, to the point where it will be justified for them to have some kind of medication, and something else is also wrong with them. So are they allowed to take medication for the other thing since they're allowed to take medication for the first thing? Right. Imagine you have somebody who has, I don't know, they have strep throat. So for the strep throat, they're justified in taking antibiotics. And also, the throat's a little sore, so therefore they want to take something to help their throat feel better.
But
would they be allowed?
Connected to that. It's sort of connected to the first thing.
It can be connected, but not
and
in terms of curing.
Foot hurt.
I mean, you could give something that's disconnected also. The same question applies. So look at what Rav Moshe writes in source number 10. He says, and regarding a patient who is permitted to take medicine on Shabbos, and who also has another ache and illness for which one may not take medicine, whether because he is allowed to take medicine for the greater disease, therefore he's also permitted to take medicine for the ache and illness for which medicine would otherwise be prohibited, or whether it is not permitted. He says, logically, one may not. You can't take for the other thing. Even though I don't know of a proof for this. I can't prove it, but logically it's true. There is no reason to permit it, since other malacha is needed to heal that ache, the secondary one, and there is concern for grinding ingredients, cooking, and transporting to a public area for this medicine specifically. So he says, the reason why is because for this secondary illness, you might need to grind ingredients, you might need to cook, you might need to transport it to a public area. Those are things which were not part of any discussion that we had at all. We were only talking about grinding. And yet Rav Moshe threw it in. So that leads to some question of what we would do if you had a medication that isn't made by grinding, but some other malacha is routinely involved in it. generally poskim assume that this line in Rav Moshe is not definitive for our halacha, and that it would still be it will be okay. It will be called a medicine that is not made by grinding, a treatment that is not done via grinding. Yes, Bailey.
So this is talking about prescribed medications versus illness medication?
No, there's no distinction between prescription and non-prescription. Okay. Yeah, that's not. Yes.
So for the stretch case, like, what if it was connected to the stroke? Like they had.
So the question becomes, and this is something that we're going to have to get to eventually, what if the ache and pain that they have is actually interfering with their recuperation from the other illness? We may end up getting into that. There are cases
sure.
where pain itself.
By.
So being caused by is not sufficient. Being caused by is not enough. It would have to be that it's actually itself harmful. Yeah. There was a hint here somewhere in the middle. Okay, great. Yes, Ella.
So, just to clarify, generally, like, leading to other malachos is not an issue?
See, yes, that's what we generally hold. So this is all under the first exception. Second exception, big one. What about where a person is undergoing an ongoing treatment? So that, let's take the antibiotic case. You had strep throat. You're already at day 3. Of a course, let's say, that's supposed to run 5 days, you're feeling much better, right? 24 hours after you start on the antibiotic, you're feeling better. Shabbos is day 3. Are you allowed to take it because it's part of an ongoing course of treatment? Or you have somebody who is dealing with a some type of an anxiety disorder, depressive disorder, and they need to take medication, and they take it on a daily basis. So is there any issue with them taking it on Shabbos? Right now, because it's built up in their system, they're not feeling anything. Are they able to take it anyway because it's part of an ongoing course of treatment? And the answer seems to be it is fine. The only question is, how do we know that it's fine? So Shlomo Kluger was a great rabbi, I think, in the end of the 18th century, beginning of the 19th, if I remember correctly. I probably put it on the sheet. No, because I didn't quote him on the sheet, so it's not on the sheet. But he was, I believe he's end of the 18th, beginning of the 19th. And he addressed this. This is a second exception.
So, yeah, it's the second on this list where you wrote one?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep, I forgot I had written it, but yes, correct.
List
of the exceptions. So, take a look at the Gemara in source number 11. Okay, Hebrew's the bottom of one side, English top of the next side. Our sages taught, if a bandage slips from a wound, okay, so somebody had a wound, they bandaged it on Thursday. On Shabbos, the bandage comes off. One may return it on Shabbos. You're allowed to put it back on Shabbos. Tosfos there quotes you, it's really Rashi originally. There is no concern for grinding ingredients, even though the bandage has on it some kind of ointment for treating the wound. Nonetheless, we're okay, since it was on him yesterday. You already started on this the day before. Yes?
What if he puts on a new bandage?
That would be a problem. We're specifically allowing putting back the old one. The new one, adding ointment, that would very create complications.
Okay.
Yeah. That's answered the other questions also?
Yeah.
Okay. So, there's a separate concern of mimareach, of smearing, which we're not getting into. We're not discussing that right now, but with applications of ointments, it always comes up. But the Shlomo Kluger says, that's my basis for saying an ongoing treatment is fine. You're just putting back what was there before Shabbos. You already started on it before Shabbos. Therefore, you're okay. It also comes up in source number 12. Separate Gemara. Rav Acha bar Yosef felt a heavy heart. Likely means some kind of a heart condition, but not known to me. He came to Mar Okva. He said to him, Mar Okva said to him, Mar Okva evidently was the pharmacist. He says to him, go drink 3 measures of chiltit. Chiltit is called asafoetida. I don't know if anybody knows what asafoetida is. It's an incredibly powerful, incredibly sharp plant that they used, and I think still use even, for medicinal purposes. That's the there's a lot to talk about the name Asafoetida, where it comes from, but it's not important for us right now. The point is, he told them, I want you to drink 3 measures of this on 3 days. So he went and drank it on Thursday, and he drank it again on Erev Shabbos on Friday. That morning, on Friday, he inquired in the Beis Medrash. He said, wait, what am I going to do? Shabbos is coming. Am I allowed to take it on the 3rd day? Rav Chiya Bar Avin told the sages who were discussing this, this happened to me. I had the same problem. And I asked Rav Adda Bar Ava, who didn't know. I asked Rav Huna, and he quoted Rav saying, soak it in cold water and place it in the sun. Soak up this chiltit in cold water and place it in the sun and presumably take it. No, not Bishul. There's no cooking going on. Don't worry about the sun part. It's not relevant for us. It's part of the preparation. So they ask, is this only within the view that permits soaking Asafoetida on Shabbos for everyone, which again is a separate discussion I don't want to get into? Even the one who prohibits normally and says you're not allowed to soak this on Shabbos only does so for someone who hasn't drunk it at all. Here, since he drank on Thursday and Erev Shabbos, not drinking on Shabbos would be dangerous. We're not going to have you stop the treatment because there is a threat involved if you do so. So the question now is, why is this okay? Why am I allowed? I understand that I have sources saying it's okay. But what's the logic in allowing this on Shabbos? You just saw it based on the last line of that Gemara. Dangerous. It's bad for you, right? In the event that somebody starts taking antibiotics and they stop in the middle, right, they always warn you about that. Antibiotic resistance can it's resistance of the bacteria or whatever to the antibiotic. That's a real thing. You could also have somebody who has built up a certain blood level, but then they stop and now it's reduced. And now potentially their illness can come back and can be even worse. Yeah.
Does that include like vitamins also?
We have a whole shiur coming on vitamins. Well, it's a good question. We're just not anywhere near there right now. Rav Moshe Feinstein makes a comment about this, which is very interesting. If you take a look at source number 13, Rav Moshe is dealing with the question of ongoing medication. And he says, if he, the person in consideration, is the sort of patient who needs 10 consecutive days in order to be healed with the pills, such that healing would be impossible if he would not take them on Shabbos. It's a 10-day course. It's guaranteed he's going to have to take it over Shabbos. And he would suffer from stress, and there would be concern for a nervous breakdown. Those of you who can read the Hebrew, beginning of the second line, the Chulshata Atzavim Shakarin Nervin, no, that's not the funny part yet, Sheikh Shash Lahamachala Shenekra Nervin Breakdown. That's how you write it in Yiddish.
That's how he writes anything in Hebrew.
Not everything, but yes.
Like
he often
writes
does.
Microwave also, like microwave.
Yes, that is correct. So Rav Moshe says, not only where the problem is, the illness at hand, the illness will get worse, the strep throat will get worse, antibiotic resistance, not only that, but also where the stress of what's going to happen to me, I'm not taking my medication, is going to be bad for the person. And therefore, he says, he certainly is in the category of one whose entire body is ill, and when we permit him to take them, do it in some unusual way, some small variation, as is possible in taking pills. We'll talk about that eventually. But his attitude is to be lenient in this regard. Now, according to this leniency, it's specifically because it'll be bad in some way in the event that you stop. So that's, if you take a look at source number 14, Rabbi Yeshua Neuwirth in the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa, says, and I heard from Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach that there is leniency only if halting will harm him, or if the cure is specifically for a period of consecutive days, such that Shabbos must be among them, so that there is no option of not doing it. Clear? Got it?
Can you Google over the last 30 seconds?
I don't know. The last part meaning about what?
What Rabbi Yeshua Neuwirth said.
Oh, yeah. So Rav Neuwirth simply says that the only way that we say it's okay to continue an ongoing course of treatment is if there is some kind of risk of harm in not doing so, or like the cure is specifically for a period of consecutive days, so that it has to be over a Shabbos, otherwise you will never be cured. So then he's willing to allow it. A little bit of redundancy in the language, but that's where he's going. Yeah.
What is meant by a small variation, like
right? So we'll get yes. He means shinui, and we'll have to get to that. We're not there yet.
Like, because I can't think of like a way to take a pill differently.
Oh
like,
no! Yeah. When we get to it, we will talk about it.
Which isn't allowed.
No. We'll talk about ways to take a pill in an unusual way. There are at least two. Okay. Yeah.
Do you think there's any difference between a Moshe Feinstein and a
Moshe Feinstein and?
Liberty.
Yeah. I mean, the difference that I would see is that Rav Moshe is broader. Rav Moshe is saying the concern is for the stress and the impact of that, not even where it's that you won't get cured of this, but that there's a separate fear mm-hmm. that this person has, which Rav Neuwirth doesn't mention. I don't know if he doesn't mention it because he doesn't agree, or if he doesn't mention it because they agree halachically, or because he doesn't think that's a thing. Mm-hmm. That someone's really going to be so damaged via anxiety because they can't take their medicine that now they're in trouble. I don't know that he recognizes that as an issue. So we have two exceptions to the rule. Everyone understands what the two exceptions are? Yeah. We're good? Okay. We're going to go to the third exception. The third exception is one that we've also talked about a little bit already. And that is where the medicine is something that healthy people do also. What healthy people do. Right? We talked about using the eyewash, where everybody uses eyewash, right? Except they're using wine. Right? We already saw the Mishnah that recorded this leniency. It's brought in the Rambam. It's brought in the Shulchan Aruch. And we saw one explanation for it already, right? We saw Rashi's approach. Rashi said, the reason why I'm allowed to do this is because I'm also preparing it before Shabbos, and therefore no one will be confused. I know I'm not allowed to make it on Shabbos because I had to prepare it beforehand, and I'm going to write Maris Ayin, even though that's not maybe the only word you could use for it. Maris Ayin, we're not concerned for appearances. Because everybody will think, I'm just doing what regular people do, not people who are ill. That's Rashi's explanation for why it's okay and when it's okay to use this kind of treatment. However, Rabbi Shlomo Ibn Aderet has a different approach. Rabbi Shlomo Ibn Aderet, also known as the Rashba. And the Rashba's approach, this is Rashi. The second approach, which is the Rashba's approach, is there was never any decree for things that healthy people do also. Yes? It's going to be number 15. The issue, he says, it was never prohibited in the first place if it's something that healthy people do. It was never prohibited. That's the Rashba's position. Take a look at source number 15, please. And you'll see it. He's talking about a different thing. He's talking about drinking olive oil for your throat in some treatment that was called, in, I think, Greek, anigron. He says, this is why he, the sage under discussion, was not bothered by drinking oil on Shabbat via anigron for someone who has a sore throat. Since people normally drink it to enjoy it, and not for medicinal reasons, so now that he does drink it with intent for medication, we don't decree lest one grind ingredients, since he could say he just intends to drink it for pleasure. The rabbis did not distinguish between one who drinks it for medicinal reasons and one who drinks it for pleasure, meaning, if it's the same, I'm going to explain. If it's the same action, you could have two people who are both doing the same exact thing. One of them has medication, and the other one just for fun. And you wouldn't be able to tell the difference between them. So the rabbi said, how are we going to prohibit this? Anybody who wants to do it is just going to say, well, I'm doing it for pleasure. So therefore, they didn't ban it in the first place. They just said the ban doesn't apply to this case.
Toba. What if it's not normal anymore? And also, what if it's normal in different parts of the world?
What if it's not a normal thing anymore in this particular society?
Nobody drinks olive oil.
Yeah.
Right, so we don't drink olive oil anymore. Then, yeah, the argument could be made that it shouldn't apply to that case.
Like, in New York, it's normal to drink olive oil, and then on Shabbos, you're in London, it's not normal to drink olive oil.
Right. So I would tend to think that we're going to go based on local, especially within Rashi. Sorry? No, where you're located right now. Where you're located right now. Certainly within Rashi, who's concerned about appearances. I'm going to give you a controversial example of this, and you'll see why it's controversial, but I really wanted to show you the source that's in number 17. Rabbi Chaim Jachter is at TABC, for those who are familiar with the school. So he has written prolifically on various areas of halacha. He's fantastic. He has articles in the school journal called Torah, which are very, very good. And in particular, he has a two-part article on taking medicine on Shabbos. And in source number 17, he talks about this. He talks about this issue. I'm just trying to figure out whether I really wanted to bring you source number 16 here, and I think the answer is I did not. I had it. I know why I had it there originally, but you can just, cross it out, do whatever you want to it. I'm not using it.
17.
Get rid of 16. We're now up to 17. 17 matters. 16, it's in a different direction. I didn't want to go there. It was on the sheet when I originally made up the sheet, and then I thought I deleted it, but I did not. So the example that he gives is one of the cases people keep asking about, the vitamins and supplements case. Do people take vitamins? Well, let me say it this way. Do people only take vitamins when they're sick?
No.
No. You take vitamins when you're healthy. But why do you take vitamins?
To
prevent yourself from becoming sick.
So you're allowed to take it before when you're sick or not.
Well, maybe even when do I view it as what healthy people do? Because it is what healthy people do. Or do I say no, it's to ward off illness, and therefore it should not be allowed? It's a treatment. It's just I take the treatment before I get sick. Those are the two ways to look at it. Yes, Ricky. Okay.
So
I mean, you're right that it's technical.
Like vegetables.
But you're right that it's technical, but technical matters.
Dude, it's like eating vegetables.
So that's the question, is how far would you go with this? What about a person who eats vegetables? Everybody eats vegetables. You eat vegetables because you need the nutrition. I mean, sometimes you eat it because you like it, fine, but sometimes you eat it because of the nutrition. You can go really far.
You're like taking yogurt when, like, you take antibiotics because, like, yogurt has
right.
Antibiotics.
Probiotics from a yogurt. I mean, there in those cases, you can definitely argue machal briyim. It's something that healthy people eat, even when they don't have that, concern for a deficiency, even when they don't have the antibiotics and so on. Take a look at what Rabbi Jachter writes in number 17. And again, like I said with the Halachapedia one, I brought this primarily because I want you to be familiar with the source that it's coming from. He says Rabbi Yosef Adler cites Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik as ruling that one may take aspirin on Shabbos. I brought this because of the vitamin one, but it's the same. It's the same fundamental conversation. People who take aspirin to make sure that they don't develop a heart problem at some point. So he says you're allowed to take aspirin on Shabbos. It's considered machal briyim. It's what healthy people eat. The Rav explains that some healthy people take aspirin as a preventative for heart attacks. Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa disagrees, defining Machal Briyim in a narrower manner. According to this source, this category applies only to something consumed by healthy people for non-medicinal purposes. As soon as it has a medicinal effect, you have a problem. So we have a machlokes. This is a debate. It will also come up when we discuss vitamins and supplements. But I'm just showing you right now that you have this disagreement. But your third exception to the rule, that which healthy people do. Clear? With a debate as to why it's okay, whether it's okay because there's no concern about appearances for others and it's where you prepared it before Shabbos, that was Rashi, or the Rashba, it was never prohibited in the first place. Natalie.
You made a point earlier, I wasn't sure who, and I didn't know the final verdict of it. It was if it's the same
Say it again. If it's...
If it's the same action, one with medication, one with her father will, the rabbis can't distinguish between them. So what's the final verdict?
So the Rashba is saying that's why it's permitted to take the to take this. Yeah, Abby.
So for something like a mental illness, would that be considered like Vishnu Shama's case, like they were saying, like as soon as it's like medical, it's not allowed, or would that be considered not allowed?
Meaning Shmir Shabbos Kehilchos, making the argument that if it's something that is, right, it's only consumed by other people for namidus, and all, therefore this should not be allowed. So, under the heter of Machal Briyim, yes, it won't be permitted under Machal Briyim, but I want to be very careful to note that as a general principle, mental illnesses, you know, tend to come under the higher categories of illness anyway, and therefore this doesn't become as relevant. Ariana? And then Ella.
I love that you use Machal Briyim.
So literally, it is what healthy people eat. Those are the literal words. Example would be the olive oil that we talked about before. Something that healthy people take also. They're not doing, you know, it's not always done for medicinal reasons. Ella, you were going
to say? What did you say the reason was for why the rabbis didn't distinguish?
So I theorized, and it's not in the text, that it's simply because how are you going to enforce it?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to tell somebody, well, that's not allowed on Shabbos. You say, why? I'm just taking it because I like it. That's all.
So it's Tylenol.
No, it's fine.
So is Tylenol not Machal Briyim because people usually only take it when they have a headache or like?
Correct.
That?
Tylenol would not be considered Machal Briyim, I think. I think that's a fair statement.
So then what would be considered? Like taking the washcloth and like putting it to your eye? Like what?
Well, I'm leaving aside washcloths, but I think things that in the medicinal field, the possibility is the aspirin case, because people take it to prevent a heart condition that doesn't currently exist for them.
People can just take aspirin every
day. Right. Yeah, that's a thing. So that would be an example of it. But also potentially you can make the argument for vitamins and supplements, that those are also going to come into this category. Yeah, that could well count. Yeah.
Two questions that are sort of connected. There are people that take Benadryl every day to fall asleep, not for the medicinal purpose. Could you take Benadryl for?
Right. So sleeping medication is a good question. I don't know if we're going to get to it this year. We'll see.
Okay. And then separately, like people who are like allergic to like pollen, Zyrtec every day, or people who like live with a cat but are allergic to their cat, they'll also take medicine every day. Once it's Shabbos, can you, like, I've just heard of this, I don't have a pet, but
so I'm going to hold off on a lot of the what ifs, because we're just overviewing for the most part now, even though I keep getting into, you know, specific examples. I'm not supposed to be. I'm going to just tell you before we conclude what the fourth exception is, and we're going to come back to it, God willing, next time. And then what we'll do is next time we're gonna start with the fourth exception. We'll do a quick review, and then we're gonna do quiz, like what we did, you know, this time, that type of thing. But the fourth exception is a case we've also discussed already, and that is where the medicine was mixed into food before Shabbos. You mixed it in before Shabbos started, not on Shabbos. Right? Think of what we do with little kids. So that's what we're talking about here. Anybody want to guess why this would be okay?
You can't
see it, and therefore?
There's no Marazayin.
Correct. And it was prepared before Shabbos, so therefore you clearly know that you're not supposed to prepare it on Shabbos. So yes, mixed into food before Shabbos is number four. We're going to discuss that. We'll review, and then we'll have the quiz. That'll all be on Wednesday. Okay? Thank you very, very much.